Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. I wish everybody was as excited to hear my voice as the radio announcer that introduces me every Sunday night. Here he is. But here I am right here in Houston, Texas. It's great to have you. You're here in my home. I'm just looking outside. The traffic doesn't look too bad. Looking over and see what's going on at the NRG Stadium where the Texans play. Obviously, not too much going on there right now. But just great to have you here with us tonight, except it is cold. It is bitter cold here in Houston, but chances are it's going to get worse before it gets better. I'm ready for the 100-degree weather. But welcome to the program tonight. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have the people that manage and founded Bob's House of Hope, which is an unbelievable organization in Fort Worth, Dallas area that is actually a home to where now they're going to be able to bring in adolescents, men and boys, to be able to live there and get the help that they need from being abused and on the street. So we're going to be talking to them in 2 weeks. I am so excited. I'm not even going to do my pre-fluff thoughts. I do want to thank everybody that had me in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the last 2 days, Thursday and Friday, speaking there at the Demand Projects Above and Beyond conference. It was a great conference, had a great time, met a lot of good people, and we had a lot of wonderful, wonderful speakers, and it was just good to be with them, and hopefully they're listening tonight because I told them all, you don't want to miss the program this Sunday night because of our excellent guest, and he is back by popular demand, and he will be back with us in 2 or 3 weeks, and it's going to be a complete, and we'll get his inside thoughts on this, a crazier show than normal, because we're going to be talking about comedy in a few weeks with our guest tonight, in the second week of February, I believe, is when that is scheduled. But as an individual who represents overcoming adversity to the utmost degree, Dave Pelser has dedicated his life helping others to help themselves. As a former Air Force Combat Air Crew member, Dave's job entailed mid-air refueling of the once highly secretive SR-71 Blackbird and the F-117 stealth fighter. While on active duty, Dave was selected as a California Volunteer of the Year. He has received personal condemnations from 4 United States presidents. He was honored as one of the 10 outstanding young Americans and later was the only American to be honored as the outstanding young person of the world. I can't even get the outstanding person of my home, but of the world, can you imagine? He is also the recipient of the National Jefferson's Award, which is considered the Pulitzer Prize for public service. Other recipients include Sandra Day O'Connor and Colin Powell, and we've all heard those names millions of times. He's the author of 9 inspirational books. His books have been on the bestseller list for well over 13 years combined. A Child Called It, which was mandatory reading for my children when they went through grade school. That book alone has been on the New York bestseller list for well over 6 years. He's the first author to have four number one international bestsellers and to have four books simultaneously on the New York Times bestseller list. And he has served recently as a California fire captain in two separate districts. For nearly 10 years, he was deployed to some of the state's most horrendous fires. His latest book, Return to the River, is a must read. And I just want to welcome to the program for the second time tonight. I consider a friend. I don't know if he considers me his friend, but I consider him mine, who believes that our only limitation is ourselves. What a powerful statement, Mr. Dave Pelzer. Dave, welcome to the show tonight.
Hey, Doc, again, I keep getting a text from Stevie Wonder. He wants his shirt back, okay? Please? How you
I
doing,
will
Doc?
wrap stuff and send it back to Stevie Wonder just as soon as I can find a box big enough. That's awesome. That's awesome. I tell you what, thank you for coming back with us, and thank you for being with us in a couple of weeks again. We're going to take a different take on everything in life and how the importance of laughter and humor and just getting to know you briefly as I have. Laughter is a big part of your life, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, what is that line from Batman? Why so serious? Let's put a smile on that face. And
Yeah.
I've always found out, because I've been in a lot of situations, whether it's in the Air Force or military ops or just regular things or being a fire captain, you can't take things too seriously because you get wrapped up, you're going to lose sleep, things aren't going to work your way. So you got to just like do something different to kind of relieve that strain. I've kind of gotten myself out of a lot of bad situations through my unusual Robin Williams-like humor, in a sense.
Yeah. We were talking about that in great detail. And here, I actually want to hear some of your comedy too, because I understand you're really good at it. And we will nip into that a little bit as the evening goes on, I'm sure. But The
Yes.
Child Called It, how many years ago has that been out?
Well, the thing was, it was printed in 93, and it was actually given to me on the 20th anniversary of my rescue. And what I did is I drove back down to Daly City, a couple 3 hours away, because I was in the Air Force flying for them, and I presented it to my teachers that rescued me on the exact day. And I thought that was really, because I act affable and kind of obtuse and loosey-goosey, but I'm very big about service and honor.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of celebrity photos. None of them are in frames. The only one that's in a frame, and it's behind my back here in my office, is I have a photo on the 20th anniversary of the four teachers that rescued me, and Miss Howe, the librarian, who everybody had a crush on, hubba hubba, and the book was dedicated to them. The second book was dedicated to them, and they went on a few talk shows, whatever, which I thought was so sweet. And unfortunately, I've been at two of my teachers have passed away, and I've been to their funeral service and got to meet their children. And even their grandchildren, in a sense. And it's life is really fast, and life is so short. And if it wasn't for those teachers that rescued me, I definitely would not have made it. There is no doubt in my mind. Between them, the principal, the school nurse, and a police officer, everything kind of just clicked in together. And that's what I think life is when certain moments in your time, whether it's a calling from a higher power or someone says something to you, and maybe that same day someone else says the exact same thing. Everything's about the timing and what you do with those tumblers, in a sense. And I was very lucky because I believed that weekend, that first Friday in March, that weekend, that my mother was going to finally, do me in. And I was just scared to death. And I don't know if we talked about it in the last show, but I got a chance to interview one of my rescuers, Mr. Ziegler, my homeroom teacher, because I was working on the book A Child Called It, and I wanted to make sure the timing and what he saw and what I saw, wanted to make it as good as possible. And we went out to dinner, and I'd been working all day at the school talking to the kids because I was a counselor in juvenile hall at the same time. And he told me why they rescued me, and I had completely forgotten why or what happened and what it was. That Thursday, prior to being rescued, my mother had dipped my arms in a mixture of ammonia and Clorox, and it burns the skin. And I was so fixated, oh my gosh, I got to do the chores on time, otherwise no food. you know, work, and just kind of just take it out of your, the pain, you just switch it off, which I was used to. And when he told me that, we were eating at a restaurant, and I dropped my fork, and he was holding my hand. I was crying. He's crying. And he's the Clint Eastwood of teachers. He's a tall, tough guy, Mr. Ziegler. And I remember saying in tears, I said, gray patches? He says, yeah, you had gray patches on your arm, and you were just flicking them off. And that's when he said, that is enough. He stormed into the principal's office. My mother would call the principal, Mr. Hansen, every day, twice a day, complaining, I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to sue your teachers, and da-da-da. And it was really trying, you know, for the staff, you know, every single day it was something. And they called the police, and the officer took one look at me, and bam, protected custody. And it was like a military Mission Impossible thing. They had to get me off the school grounds, get me out of the area. I will never forget the police officer was required by his sergeant to call my mother to say that I was in protective custody. And he said, we have to leave now, this second. If you have to pee, you pee in your pants, we're leaving now. Here's a police officer, armed police officer, trained police officer, scared of my mother. So we had to get out of the city limits, you know, and it was like a code 3, you know, just with the lights and so forth. And they took me to 20 minutes later, I'm, you know, in a pediatrician's office examining, getting examined and so forth. And it was looking at it now, you know, because I just turned 64 and, you know, and I cannot begin to tell you, Doc, how bloody lucky I was to have these angels, you know, and that just, it was just, for to them, like I told Mr. Ziegler when we were eating, I said, sir, one time you put your arm on my shoulder and said, you're doing a good job, son. Now keep up the good work. And he said, son, I don't remember that. I said, sir, I do. Because it's nothing like I feed homeless people and I try to be a good giver of good deeds. And yet I'm passing out socks and they're crying. And they say, thank you. God bless you. I says, well, and bless you. And yet I'll meet people, it says, do you remember on this one call as a firefighter, you did this for my son or my daughter? I'm going, well, you know, you always want to say, yeah, sure I do. But you don't because you're just so overwhelmed. But what I'm trying to convey is simplistic, random acts of kindness. I have here in my hand, Doc, you're the first one to know this, the recipients of the second annual Dave Pelzer Humanitarian Awards.
Oh.
And I try to look for people in my local community that are just doing good deeds. And to them, it's like, I got to do this. It's a calling for me. I'm going, yes. And God bless you for that. Because to the other people, it's everything. And right now we live in a micro sensitive climate, whether it's politics or finances or Mother Nature. 9 hours south of me, I have the most horrendous fire that is mankind has never seen before. I have over 150,000 people in the LA area that are dispersed. 450,000 people are without electricity. I have over 10,000 firefighters actively right now in the LA basin area because of the storms, the wind storms and so forth. And it's amazing to me how lucky you are, or we are. You know, I have water. The movie, I love that movie, and I hope your eyes have seen it. Goodness gracious, what was that? Tom Hanks was stranded on an island. I forget the name of the movie, but at the in the beginning of the third act, he's been rescued, and he's home, or he's in a hotel, and all his friends are visiting him, and there's just mountains of food and mountains of shrimp and lamb and anything. It's a feast from like Games of Thrones, for goodness sakes. And he says, how you doing there, bud? You doing okay? He goes, and Tom Hanks is so simple. He's kind of like shaking a little bit. And he goes, yeah, I'm fine. Really? You okay? I have ice.
Yeah.
And that says the whole thing. Castaway was the
Castaway.
Name of the
film. Yeah.
And in my life, my biggest thing is Flower Friday. Every Friday, I go to the local supermarket and I probably buy, I don't have a lot of vices. I like a good meal. I like a good drink. I love a good movie. And I know I'm very reclusive. I really am, Doc. But I have flowers every Friday that fills the entire house. And every Friday, I call it clean sheet Friday. I love fresh, clean sheets. So part of my message, too, is, you know, don't wait for your happiness. Make your happiness.
Right.
And if you think you're having a bad day, just watch the news. you know, and just, you know, pray for those that aren't doing too well. And again, those small random acts of kindness. And the book, a child called it, I can't, when you're working, you know, because I was on the road 200, 300 days a year, 16 hours a day, solving everybody's problems, doing in-service training, visit military bases because I have the rank of chief, do a fundraiser, maybe do a comedy thing, visit a juvenile hall. You know, I would stay extra busy in a sense. And I just can't believe that the first book was such a success. It's a perfect Hollywood story. No one wanted to touch it. It was called, it's like pornographic violence in a sense. We had some folks, I think in Virginia, a church that actually burned A Child Called It. They burned it. And I was on a talk show the next morning. They said, hey, Pelzer, how do you feel about, your book was burned last night? Yeah, we were there. They were burning your book. I'm going, you know, my grandparents are from Austria and we don't like that. We don't like the book burning business. Okay. And to quote my friend Indiana Jones, Nazis, gee, I hate these guys.
Unbelievable.
But the success of that book is just phenomenal. I just cannot believe I can say the sentence. That book at one time was the number one book in the world.
That is how many copies have you sold of that one?
I don't know, Doc. Millions.
Yeah.
Millions, you know. And of course, like anybody in the business, I signed a very one-sided contract, you know, and those things happen. You just don't know, you know, and the book business is just like the music business or kind of like the entertainment business. There's so many ways that people can, I had an agent who knew I was embezzled twice already. He actually embezzled me too. I'm going, what? You know, and they all say the same thing. Hey, I like you. You do a good job. It's not personal. It's just business. I'm going, well, that's pretty personal to me. Because obviously, you know, and they say it's, some people feel psychologically if you've been mistreated, you know, you're an easy mark. I'm going, you want to really think that over? Because, you know, I'm here. And, you know, I used to go after bad guys, you know, and I've done child abuse cases and so forth. I'm going, do you really want to be on my bad side after everything I've been through? Because the worst thing I can do, I had to fire a guy one time. I fired a few people, a CPA that wasn't a CPA. A guy who says he was my manager and he will take care of me. And for me to call someone and say, I can never see or talk to you again. And every day they look at the books selling well, or they see him on a talk show. I'm going, that's the kind of a quiet revenge thing.
Yeah.
You know, people with kindness.
From my understanding, Dave, I remember speaking to, it was the former business manager or CEO or whatever of HCI. And we was having lunch together one day and we were talking about you and your book. And he said, Greg, you don't understand what he did when that book came out. He filled the trunk of his car up and he drove all around this country. Is that true?
Not really. I would give a lot of books away in a sense if I was local, but we did have books shipped to wherever I was going. In a sense, and either sell them or give them out to school kids. And, you know, and I still, my goodness, I probably ship out, 40 to 60 books a month, just gratis to help people out. Or if you get requests, or I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of requests from LA because we had a fire in one house locally. And they said, oh my God, are you that guy that wrote the book? I said, yes, as well. You came to our house, there was a structure fire, and you always donate money, you want to help out. And they said, you know, we were going to go back in the house to get your books, Dave. I say, stop. I can always send you books. Okay, no problem. But I was on the road quite a bit. And that kind of, you know, and that was the thing, too. I didn't know it at the time. But I would be interviewed maybe 5 to 7 times a day. Like, what is the person of the world doing in Wahoo, Nebraska or Davis City? I'm going, well, I'm doing an in-service training. And then that gets picked up by AP. And then I didn't know it at the time, too, but these movie producers who do the talk shows, they go, wow, we're seeing Pelzer. Let's, like Montel Wimps people were very kind, and they wanted me to do a show with them. And they would call like twice a month. They said, we want to do a show about you being a victim of child abuse. I said, no way. And finally, they had a young producer says, okay, what would it take to get you on our show? I said, let's do a show about teachers. Let's do that. Let's do a nice tribute show. I've got a great backstory. And then, you know, we can tell the amazing work that they do behind the scenes. In America, they're basically the kids' parents and uncles and aunts. And that was we actually didn't script the show, but we gave them suggestions on what things to kind of talk about and so forth. And Mr. Williams was very, very kind to me and so forth. And that's what really launched the book in 97, because the book was printed in 93 and I had to buy my own rights to my book back from the printer. And then it was published by HCI, your publisher, my publisher, Health Communications, in 95. And it languished. It just languished just enough to keep it going. And the thing was, and this is where, again, we talk about timing and tumblers and connection. I called the sales ladies and saying, okay, I got this grand idea. The second book's coming out. Let's package the two books together. And they get like $2 off. Okay, I'll just take less money. And this will be a great thing, a great packaging. You know, I thought I was a PR genius. And they said, Mr. Pelzer, you have to understand, we're not going to publish A Child Called It anymore. We'll let the second book come out, it will fade, and, you know, it was a contractual thing. It wasn't selling enough because Chicken Soup for the Soul that they had was going crazy. Yeah. And yet, right, I mean, it was actually like we had 2 weeks, and within that 2 weeks' time, we had booked and taped the Montel Williams show. And whenever I talk to Mr. Williams, Montel, he's very nice. I always say, you know, you're the reason why A Child Called It did well. You know, because it just found an audience. Because to me, as a writer, it was never about abuse. To me, it was always about that resilience.
Yeah, make it through.
And it was a different writing style. You know, this was kind of like if Nolan, Christian Nolan, who does the Batman movies and Inception and all those things, he's a mathematician. And me as a writer, I'm very visual. You know, and I try to put feeling in. It's like, oh my gosh, you're watching this book movie, and you're thinking, oh, don't do that, Dave. Oh, watch out, Dave. It's like you're yelling at the screen, psychologically, in a sense. And I liked about the story too is, again, behind the scenes, what the teachers were doing. It may not have seemed to be a lot, but over time, it really, you know, added up to the case. And I'm just still in awe. I just can't believe it, that it was, the publishing is one in a million. Getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, that's like you're playing for the San Francisco Giants, baby. You're playing for the Dallas Cowboys, baby. And the fact that it made the list, and then they have 2, 3, 4 books on the list. And I remember I was being interviewed by a local magazine in San Francisco. I was in Fresno, California, and I just got done with a gig. I had 40 minutes for this one interview, and I was going to write. I was in the middle of writing book 4, book 5, whatever. And this young man comes over and with the facts says, Mr. Pelzer, look, you got 4 books on the list. And the guy's like, oh my God, I've never seen such a thing. And I actually said, okay, that's good. Let's continue with the interview. I didn't allow myself to go, oh my gosh. You know, I mean, of course, I thank my higher power and my staff and HCI and everybody involved with the book business. But one of the things I regret is, you know, working too fast and too furious. And I've slowly, it's like even being a firefighter at 2 separate districts, Doc, I got to tell you, I'm surprised I'm alive. Because yeah. I would be a firefighter 24/7 in gear, in boots, going back and forth and back and forth. And this was even during COVID. And after fires, it shuts down Highway 1 from 2 lanes to 1 lane. So 1 hour trip becomes a 3.5 hour trip. And then sometimes I would be back in Sea Ranch where I resided at the time. And as I'm rolling in this in the district, we call it, there would be another, you know, incident. And I just have to got my radio. OK, 4412 responding. Go. And then during COVID, that was we all did a good job with that, really, because that could have become what I call a Mad Max situation. And there was an incident and it didn't get a lot of press that a food truck was hijacked in Nevada. And if it got a lot of press, that might have had other people going, well, maybe I can do that too. And then you start losing, you know, it becomes a chaotic situation. But I like that line from Jim Lovell, the astronaut in Apollo 13, you know, in the course of a life, you never know what events may transpire. And I have to tell you, Doc, I am the luckiest, most blessed person I know. And we were talking before we got on air, I study books and personalities, what makes people beautiful, what makes them ugly, makes them horrible, you know, and I'm always looking for that one trigger. Okay, why did, okay, so on that time and that day, you made that decision. And if you didn't, it could have gone bad for you. And I've never read or experienced anybody that's had the blessings that I've had. I mean, I went from living in a basement for basically 8 years, you know, and I was not allowed to speak. And after swallowing ammonia twice in 24 hours, because I do have what's called a herniated esophagus and trachea. That's why, like, even right now, I have to swallow a certain way, or I do talk a little fast because I have to keep my tube lubed. And yet, you know, to do comedy or to do an in-service training or whatever, I mean, I'm claustrophobic. And, you know, I used to fly for the Air Force. Afraid of heights, I was a paratrooper, for goodness sakes. And I've had a thing like if I'm, like, even as a junior firefighter, there was certain evolutions that I wasn't doing too well. I said, screw it. You guys go eat lunch and I'll throw the ladder again and again and again and again. So it becomes, you know, muscle memory. You know, and out of all the things, becoming a firefighter, let alone a fire captain, because it's all about communication, really. You know, that was the hardest thing for me to do because there's so many elements. It's not just, you know, squirting water, but you have to, like, extrication on cars or trucks, wildland fire, vegetation, fire, you know, all these hazmats, medical, CPR, so many things. And it's amazing the job that these men and women do, you know, on a constant basis. And I just am so lucky, Doc, you know, and I get to meet people like yourself, you know, because, I mean, you know, oh, Dave, you're great. God bless you. I'm going, Doc, what about the work you do? Because I don't think a lot of people knew this. But when we first had our show a couple weeks ago, you were not wearing the Stevie Wonder blind knee shirt and you weren't in the solace of your humble abode. You were, folks, this man was sitting on his luggage in an airport when people were running back and forth. And he says, I got to do the show at Pelzer. And I was actually saying, Doc, we can reschedule. He says, no, we're not going to reschedule. We got to do the show. The show goes on. I'm going, well, Doc, you're kind of a badass. And for me to say that to you, okay, I'm just saying.
May I quote you on that?
Well, okay, you can do it, but I can't. Actually, I can do it. You can't. There it is. There's that. It's weird. Like, we'll talk about it more on our next show, but, like, when it comes to comedy, you know, I just look at myself and going, oh, my God, did you just say that? Did you just do that? You know, but, again, I didn't talk, and I remember just studying films when I was in foster care and looking at different characters from like Peter Sellers, Inspector Clouseau. Oh, God, what a beautiful man. What a beautiful, an amazing man. And then as you become an adult, you find out, when Mr. Sellers was flying from, I think, from England to L.A., he did not know he was going to do a Clouseau. So he was just trying, he was actually in wardrobe trying on different costumes and hats, whatever. And he walked out of the bathroom one time and he almost tripped over the stewardess. Oh, okay, let's forget. Hello, how are you doing? Are you on the floor? Let's get you up, 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 up. And he would start doing the voice and trying to just, okay, look for that pitch. And half the stuff that you see in, like, let's say, the Pink Panther films was impromptu. What a genius. And I think he was one of the first voices I did. And, of course, another one of the first voices I did was the Dirty Harry Clint Eastwood character.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got beat up a lot in junior high. I would show up. Okay, I'm a Dapper Dan man now. Like, when I go out, I'll wear an Armani suit and whatever, and I feel, whenever I put on Armani, I feel like Pelzer, Dave Pelzer, Mr. Bond, I presume, you know, you sit up differently and stuff like that. But in foster care, I'll never forget, I had hush puppy shoes. Now, you're going to have to Google that, America, if you're under 40. It was like a 2-inch lifter shoe, hush puppies with the felt, and I had red corduroy pants, and from Kmart, I had a green, black, gray flannel shirt. And, of course, the black frame sunglasses. And I got beat up every single day, Doc, by Tony Manfro. I was supposed to stand on this one square so he can find me and beat me up. And if I wasn't on the square, he would find me and beat me up. And so one time, one of my foster brothers says, you know, you're watching these Disney films with Kurt Russell. Come on, we're going to put you in the R theater. Like, what's R? Real cool. Okay, it's cool. All right. And you know, I saw this Dirty Harry character, and this guy was walking, and he was smooth, and he's squinting. You know, he had a growl in his mouth, you know, like, you feel lucky. Well, do you, punk? And my foster brother says, that's what you need to do so you don't get beat up. Okay, I could do that. So I'd practice in front of the mirror. A, B, C, D. What the hell? Get out of here. And of course, Monday comes, you know, and it's just, Tony's got his little gang of his pack, his wolf pack. And he starts beating me up and I fall to the ground. And I go, you feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? And everybody, oh, my God. Wow, that was so cool, man. And, of course, I stood up and Tony hit me again and again and again. So, and then it's, he leaves and his pack's like, oh, my God, don't tell him, but that was cool, man. That, you need to do that voice more often. So, like, okay. And that kind of led to doing impersonations and then having the confidence, you know, that inner confidence to because I think with a lot of people when they do voices or characters, like, they just do the voice. But the like if you do Arnold Schwarzenegger, you got to use the hands and you got to look directly the person in the eye and you say the word fantastic a lot of, because everything is fantastic in my fantastic life. Ah, so you kind of like and you become that character in a sense. And that's why I think I love movies. I love good movies. You know, I love like Dr. Zhivago type movies or Casablanca. Oh my gosh, what an incredible love story. And I really think, and you and I talked about this, Return to the River has that Casablanca-ness to it.
Yeah, it does.
But you have to kind of give up the love of your life so that person can move on to another, you know, calling. And then at the same time too, just because of you're not, you know, husband and wife anymore, doesn't mean you don't lose that love for each other. And then, you know, my characters, you know, kind of like, okay, I'm fighting fires and trying to help people out. And the COVID thing was really, really hard for a lot of us. But, you know, life moves on. And I'm just, again, so, so blessed. And I love life. Sometimes I'm going, okay, what am I going to do today? Okay. And life just says, okay, here you go. You know, you just go through it as best you can. And you do something. I think the older you get, and I'm kind of semi-retired, is you want to be useful. And my program is I like to make people laugh three times a day. I try to do three good deeds a day. And I'm trying to train myself, okay, now do something for Dave. You know, like watch Games of Thrones for 3 hours or read a book or, you know, try to relearn piano, for goodness sakes. And I really believe, Doc, that life is what you make it.
Exactly.
I've been fortunate enough to make a pretty good life. And, you know, I'm a grandparent. I saw the kids a few days ago. I have a grandson. He has autism, but on the low end, God bless. And he's a player. There's a photo of him. I'm kind of looking at it right now. He's home from school. He got the pumpkin award for whatever Halloween. And he's got his sunglasses on and he's kind of doing this. He's doing this. He's got a little, lollipop. And I called my son, oh my God, your son is Steve McQueen of kindergartners. He is Steve McQueen, Bullet, Steve McQueen, Mr. Cool. He goes, you know what, Dad? You're kind of cool yourself. I'm going, yes, I am. You know, Dad, what about? I'm going, son, it skips a generation.
That's funny. Tell you what, we're going to take a commercial break. 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back. And I want to find out on the other side of this break, out of the 9 books, Dave, which one is the one that's your favorite? And we're going to find out that answer to that question on the other side of this break. 888-627-6008. We'll be back in about a minute and 28 seconds. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, Learning How to Turn Life's Pain into Life's Power and Purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out. because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. I tell you what, one of the highlights of my life when my first book came out, I went to Barnes & Noble right down the street here on Holcomb. It's closed now. They moved it to another location. And I walked into the Barnes & Noble, and there was Dave's book, Child Called It. There was Dr. Bruce Perry's. I believe it was A Boy Raised by Wolves or something like that. And next to him was my book. And it's like, all my lands, I've died and gone to heaven. I'm right next to two people that I look up to so much in life, Dave Pelzer. And I believe there was another couple of books of yours, Dave, because you have several. And that was just such an honor. But tell me, out of all the books, which one is the one that you say, wait, if I had to only write one, would it be Child Called It? Or... you look at all nine of them.
And it's kind of a weird anomaly because when I wrote A Child Called It, I thought, you know, one and done.
Yeah.
And then I was with a speaking firm, and it was amazing how everybody was reading the book. And it was printed, so you couldn't get it in bookstores. There was no distribution. So it was passed around quite a bit. And we got a lot of things like, okay, what happens next? I'm going, well, I was rescued, like I said. And, I, you know, it says in the back of the book, flies for the Air Force, has a kid. And it was kind of like, I thought, well, there's a second part, I guess. What happens when we have an alien-like child that's beamed at the planet Earth that lived in a basement? And how do we construct that to make him a normal, per se, human being? I thought that would be a nice tribute to foster care. Oh, my God, I've got the story from 12 to 18. I can do that. And then I felt like Christopher Reeves in Superman. He did Superman 1, 2, 3, 4. So I wanted the third book to be a self-help book. As I was speaking about that, I said, no, we have to have the man named Dave. And I thought, okay, a child, lost boy, man named Dave. That would be fine. But I think as a writer, and what I do too as a writer, if you look at A Child Called It, it's written by an 8-year-old boy. It's very graphic. And 8-year-old boys are very visual, fast paced. And if you look at A Child Called It, I don't think there's one word that's over 3 syllables, and that was deliberate. But as a writer, I came up with a book called The Privilege of Youth. And to me, as a writer, initially, it was going to be a teenage romp. It's almost like Fear and Loathing on Las Vegas by Hunter S. Thompson, but written by, you know, a kid, you know, teenagers. And I was working very hard as a teenager in foster care, and I moved into a Leave It to Beaver neighborhood, Robert Kincaid type thing. And they have never, hang on, I got to make sure I'm not swearing in front of children. They never saw an F child before. What was an F child? A foster kid. They thought, oh my God, did you murder someone? They removed you from your home. It was kind of a prejudice in the 70s.
Yeah.
And yet I bumped into two boys who became like my siblings, my brothers. And I was only there for a few months. And what I liked about The Privilege of Youth, it became kind of like a Stand By Me in the end of the second act. And it's about bonding and friendship and how these kids became men and, you know, we're very close. And I thought, because I love movies so much, I thought, God, if I was a director, I got to direct that film. It's an easy piece. It's got some comical relief to it in a sense. You know, I was kind of a rascal, you know, and we did stunts like the biggest stunt we did was driving backwards and acting like you're driving forwards. Like we didn't do this. We had to drive. So I would drive backwards. And people would freak out, you know. Or
I did the very same thing. That scares me.
I landed on two wheels one time, which was kind of scary. And I look at it now going, oh, my gosh. But to answer the question, I really believe as a writer, my favorite book is Return to the River because it really encompasses so much. We get requests or questions. Why did your mother flip out? What made her flip out? And we kind of explored that in a nice way. Or how come your father didn't do this? Well, he was broken and you put it in, you know, you have flashbacks and flash forwards in the middle of COVID, in the middle of being, you know, the Tubbs fire in California, in the middle of crisis within crisis. And if I was a movie director, I swear to goodness, I would want a direct return to the river.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. That's an excellent book.
I think from production until I got it edited very, very finite, and I gave it to the publisher within 6 months, and usually a book takes me 2 or 3 years. Oh. And it's a thick book, and it's an adult book, and like I say before, it's a story of lost love, and it's really a story about, you know, the family dynamic, in a sense.
Beautiful.
You know, whether it's my family or my you know, living with my mom at that time. And it was really sad because you finally realize why my mother went insane, or why my father felt like he could, even though he's a firefighter in San Francisco, how he just couldn't or wouldn't, you know, open that door. Or I remember it used to break my heart when he would say, you know, one of these days I'm gonna have a word with that woman, and one of these days you watch, I'm gonna, oh yeah. And it never happened. And you kind of find out why.
Yeah. Great book. Tell you what, we have a caller. Let's patch the caller in, Dave. I don't know if you can hear or not. Thomas, bring in Veronica.
I'm so nervous. Oh, my gosh. I just thank you for being brave. And thank you even more for being funny, because that's even better. Well, no, it goes along with being brave. But I don't know. Your book, I read it when I was a kid. I can't even remember how old. I was very, very, very young. I just remember it broke me, and I was like, wow. And it was everything that you've described, you know, like just crazy, but from a child's view. And I don't know. It's just amazing. And Pastor, you know, reminded me that you're coming on tonight. And I was like, how amazing. Oh my gosh. Cause I forgot last time, but I was listening to the archives. And I just think it's wonderful. Everything you're doing, you're amazing. Thank you for, you know, again, being great and funny and sharing your story. And yeah, I think that's, you know, that's my comment.
Well, and thank you very much. Again, it's just a lot of luck in life. But I also believe, too, as Doc knows, it's what you do with your luck. You know, and what kind of crushes me at times is when people survive a situation, particularly if they were hurt as a child and didn't have the mechanisms or understanding, and how they allow, and I have to say this gently, but they allow that to basically crush them forever. You know, I've never met anybody that survived cancer and said, I'm a victim of cancer. They're saying, oh my God, you know, I have an extra day. I've got an extra week. I'm going to get a checkup next month. I'm cancer free. That's a great day. And in my case, living in California, I live in a flood area and a fire area. And every summer that we don't have a fire or we don't flood in the wintertime, we're so grateful. And, you know, it's a lot of blessings involved. And I just want people to be the best that they can be and be as happy as they can be. Even if you've got to fake it for a little bit, just smile or just put yourself out of yourself and just do for someone. They say the best therapy, and Doc knows this, is to be of service for others. That's the best mental health therapy you can do, whether it's feeding homeless or passing out socks or sometimes, you know, whenever I go to Mickey D's, or Wendy's, I'm always on the lookout to see if someone can use a Happy Meal, you know, and it's very simple. You buy a couple of things, put them in the bag, and you give it to someone and move on. And again, it's nothing to you, but to them, it's everything. And I've been so blessed. And that's why I was talking earlier about the Dave Pelzer Humanitarian Award, is I've been blessed with so many accolades or so many blessings. I thought a few years ago, what if I can do something to make other people feel valued and special? And one of the recipients, she said, oh, I don't want this award. I don't want it. I say, it's not about you, miss. It's about you inspiring others to step up and step out and do something. And that's what we need to do as a community or as a, you know, the region, the county, the state, the nation, and even the world. You know, you never know, you know, what the magnitude of that tsunami of goodwill can do for others. So I appreciate a compliment, but I got to tell you, I am just a lucky, lucky person. I truly am. And Doc knows that. Because it could have gone, I think I was 14, and I've been in foster care for about a year and a half. And this psychiatrist announced to me in front of my foster mother and my social worker, there was just no chance. because I had been isolated for so long. Wasn't speaking very well. I would speak with my hands. I was very hunched over and scared of every little thing. They said basically by age 18 or 20 that I'd be dead or in prison. And I'll never forget, I thought to myself the same thing that my social worker said. And she said to me, you know, I expect greatness from you. If you, David, can survive all that you did without any help or any training, what in the hell can you not accomplish? And I knew that on the inside. I was affable and stupid and got beat up a lot in foster care. But I knew on the inside, you know, where you don't see, you know, I'm strong and I'm brave. And then I was also learning these other foster kids were just screwing around. You know, they're drinking and chasing girls, chasing boys, getting in a lot of stupid trouble. And I was working 40 hours a week in junior high, 60 to 80 hours a week in high school because I wanted to survive. I didn't want to be homeless. I wanted to make something of myself. And thank goodness the Air Force and its ill wisdom allowed me to enlist. And I took advantage of every situation I could. I was a swamp cook in Florida for 3.5 years. If you're being discharged, dishonorable discharge, they throw you into swamp for a couple of weeks so you can get a taste of your medicine. I did that for 3.5 years. And I then eventually became a paratrooper, which a cook doesn't become a paratrooper. Okay. And then I wanted to become an air crew member. I remember writing Kelly Johnson, the designer of the SR-71. He was my pen pal in foster care. I mean, unbelievable. And then I got to be involved with the SR-71. But it's just what you do with your luck, you know. And I think, you know, especially as you grow older and you see people pass away in front of you or things don't go good for people that are slowly dying in front of you, you know, I am just so, so lucky that I've had a very adventurous life. And my last prayer before I go to bed, you know, I pray for family and people I know or don't know, people not doing well. As I always pray to my higher power, give me one more good mission. Please let me be of service, you know. And I'm not sure what's going to happen tomorrow. But as the saying in the Bible, do not worry because each day has enough trouble of its own. Wow. So I'm just, that's why I'm glad to be on Doc's show because Doc can have anybody he wants. That's just the truth. And everybody says, oh, Dave, you're doing a great job. I'm going, what about Doc's work for 20, 30, 40 plus years? The lives, the generational changes that you've made in the lives of others. So it's my honor, Doc. It really is. And I'm just happy, man. I'm just a happy guy.
When you did that, had that internal drive inside of you, Dave, did you ever do it to, in spite being told you'll never amount to anything? Did that fuel your tank whatsoever?
No, it was not a revenge thing. I just knew, okay, my mind, I had to think very fast, Doc. And I still do that at times. I'm a good problem solver. I'll go, oh, yeah. Look, we don't need that. It's kind of like Minority Report with Tom Cruise. We don't need that. We need this. Let's expand that, whatever. And to me, it was, okay, I'm not being fed. What can I do? She's not going to feed me. I got to feed myself. Okay, she's going to beat me up. I had to learn kinesiology at a very young age. So for me, I was always thinking ahead. I figured, okay, if I can survive being stabbed and then take care of myself medically by squeezing the slit was oozing, you know, it was infected. I thought if I can survive this, 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 and this, then I can do this in a sense. So it was just a matter, and in foster care back in the day, we were kind of impregnated, brainwashed, that foster kids never graduate high school, foster kids never become, you know, a useful part of society. I thought, you know what, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to walk my own path. And it was just one thing led to another, to another, to another. In a sense, I mean, I thought at age 52, I'm not going to be on the road 300 days a year and I was going to retire. And then hook or crook, they said, man, you know, we have a volunteer fire department. Would you like to be a firefighter? I'm going, what? Yeah. You know, and you just stumble into things, you know, and that's just life, too. You know, you man plan, God laughs. But you just, you know, it's like falling in love. I know a lot of people, oh, I can't wait to fall in love. I'm going to stop it. Take that out of the equation. Okay, when you fall in love, it's going to be unexpected. Will you make a friend or have a lover, a wife, a partner, whatever? You know, you can't plan it. It just happens, but you have to be open to it in a sense. So I don't know what the future holds for me. Maybe I'm supposed to be the funniest grandfather that there is or you know, be a better father for my son and his wife. Or I just don't know, but I'm just happy with every day that you know, what was it? Mel Brooks has a club called the Obituary Club. Him and his friends get up every morning, get on the phone. They're having coffee and cigars. And they're saying, okay, who died today? okay, we're still alive. We're minus one. Okay, we got to go to that funeral service. But, you know, and I got to tell you, 60, I don't feel 64. You know, I still work out. I'm trying to watch my diet, trying to adjust things or whatever. But I don't feel 64. I just feel like a young kid still, in a sense. But as Clint Eastwood said, man's got to know his limitations. So I'm trying to limit. 2 years ago for my birthday, I benched 210 pounds twice. That was stupid. It was stupid. Okay, so now I'm going, okay, less weight, but more reps, okay, more cardio, let's go. So, you know, there's always something around the bend, and I'm just thrilled to be here, man.
Yeah, that's great. Tell me what your thoughts are with what you see and experience being a firefighter, what you've gone through in life as a child. What's your thoughts about vicarious trauma, secondary trauma, how... what the California firefighters are dealing with right now in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
What kind of aftermath are they going to have to endure from your perspective? Because you've been there, done that in the most dramatic way.
Well,
what are they going to have to deal with?
It's firefighters, you know, like police officers or anybody, you know, the first responders, we have a tendency to compartmentalize in a sense, you know, and I always tell my younger firefighters, I say, okay, you know, if we're doing like a medical call, code 3, life and death, CPR, you know, you keep your mouth shut. You know, you don't overpromise. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to be part of the incident within an incident in a sense. And I always tell them afterwards, okay, we're driving home. You know, if you got something to say, let's say it, you know, let's get it out. Let's call it purging in a sense, because you got another call in a few minutes or a few hours in a sense. But I think for me, you know, I compartmentalize as I've done as a kid. And sometimes it does hit you, and it should hit you. You know, you don't want to swallow it because now you've got all these hurt lockers, and the elephant in the room is going to, you know, if there's an elephant in the room, it's going to eat, it's going to poop. And after a while, that's a lot of poop, a lot of feed, you know, whatever. So you got to just kind of let it out and as best you can. And we do have in this day and age, you know, people who come in and want to counsel, or if you just want to talk about it and get it out of your system, you know, but it is kind of, looking at it now that I'm kind of out of it, you know, I'm kind of on the reserve list because of my age and so forth. Because, you know, joining the fire department at age 52 is kind of weird. Okay. And you're with these young kids and becoming a fire captain. I was allowed to train these young kids who are now married and have their own families. Like, oh my God, I knew you when you were 20, for goodness sakes. But they're very focused and very brave. And it's just something you have to work with or work through, in a sense. And I really think particularly in the LA area right now, because we have, I think, 4 active fires. They just arrested an arsonist 2 days ago, and they suspect another arsonist in the area, for God's sakes. You know, it's pretty bad when Billy Crystal loses his home. Paris Hilton, I'm not worried about Polaris Hilton, okay? But it's just sad, you know, to lose everything. And that's the thing, too, I was going to say. You know, these people didn't have, like, warning. You know, usually have red flag warnings, which we did have, but the fire just erupted so fast and so furious. They had exactly 5 seconds to get out of their homes. Wow. And I thought, what would I grab if I had 5 minutes? And of course, I'm thinking photos. Grab all the photos I can, some underwear, socks, whatever, but photos. And that's, I think, what life is. Okay, that's important, you know, because we can always take the photos again, or, you know, with cloud and stuff like that. But that's just really, really hard and really sad. And then at the same time, too, being a first responder, when you're in a critical situation, it's called MCI, multiple casualty incident, or an incident within an incident. You know, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I always own them. I tell, okay, this fire, I made this mistake, don't do that. I should have done this or that. But again, when you're, you know, the quarterback in the football field with a lot of moving pieces, you just have to make these decisions, just like a parent, just like a teacher, just like anybody. You know, yeah. you do the best of what you have, and you just move on. Wow. And it is kind of sad, because especially when I lived in Sea Ranch in North Sonoma Coast, you know, I'm doing CPR. I did CPR on my neighbor who invited me for a martini hours before. And I says, no, I'm too busy. We'll do the martini tomorrow. And a few hours later, I'm first on scene, and I have to drag his body throughout the house so we can work on him. You have to have a lot of room to work on him. And we worked on him for over 2 hours, and unfortunately he didn't make it. And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, and but at the same time too, you're like, you're doing your job, you're doing your duty, in a sense. And you, it's almost like, you know, a lot of people run away from a fire, and these men and women are running into it to try to assist as they can. It's just like you being a doctor, you're entering a psychological, you know, code three, life and death. And you have people that you care for that you want to help out, and you just do the best that you can. What is that prayer? Do the best that you can for as long as you can, for as many as you can. I think that's a Baptist prayer. And that's a good line right there for all of us. And another good line is, the purpose of life is the evolution of service. I like that line.
Well, Dave, I tell you what, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. It is an honor again. In a few weeks, put on your comedy hat, and we're going to be talking about the importance of laughter, joy, and smiling and comedy. In about 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have you back on. Thank you so much for sharing tonight.
Thank you for all the work that you do, and I want to thank your staff and for having us on. And, you know, in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back.
There you go. Well, looking forward to it. Can't wait. Thank you, folks. Thanks for being with us. And we always like to end the program each and every week letting you know, no matter what, there's always hope. Join us right here next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.